Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Okay, we've now got a little bit of time for questions. So can I ask you, if you are asking a question, and I hope some of you will want to, here is man with microphone. So please wait for the microphone to come. Please say who you are. Please show your best profile to the camera so that people who are not in the room know a little bit about who you are. And can I ask you also to keep your questions brief? Perhaps we could take, if there are questions, we could take two or three at a time, and then I'll ask the panel to deal with them according to taste, if that's okay. We've got about 10 minutes. Any questions, any comments from any of you? Yes, sir.
Thank you. My name is Matt Lane, and I work for the Royal Opera House. My question is to you, John. I just want to find out more about an example of what you were trying to illustrate there about how creative industries can help government deliver public services. Can you give me an example of the kind of public service you were particularly thinking of in making that statement?
Sure. Another question.
It's Lois Acton, Urban Unlimited. One comment and then a question. My comment is that the Social Value Act, I think that's an opportunity with public provision to actually incorporate some of the things that you've just spoken about. But on a question, I think it's to everybody here. How will you incorporate those that don't go down the traditional routes? Because we have a huge, huge talent pool in the UK of people that don't necessarily go down the traditional routes of school, college, and into the things that perhaps Catherine was talking about. So my question really is, how do we engage those people who are bedroom entrepreneurs, who are brilliant designers? I work across fashion, music, and I'm an ex-ITV employee. So TV and media production, social media, all of those areas are of great interest. Creative economies, already one of the biggest earners across the world, and yet we're still failing to get the very people that are creative into the creative industries. Thank you.
And another question. Yes, there's one at the front here.
Thank you. Mary Carswell, Birmingham City University. I'm really interested to know how we can make this all simple and understandable. In fact, Dinah's point about simplicity, because there are so many different things going on and so many different strands, so I'd be really interested in the panel's thoughts on that.
Okay, thank you. Let's deal with those very quickly in response to that first question. I think if you go on the Design Council website, you'll see some fabulous examples of where designers, both product and process designers, have looked at aspects of the health service. Design out MRSA, how can you reduce superbug infection? Designing out violence in A&E departments at weekends, fantastically successful. But I'll tell you one very quick one. Cambridge Consultants, one of the big high-tech businesses in Cambridge, were asked by the NHS to look at the issue of kids not using asthma inhalers correctly, because most of them don't. They've come up with a fantastic solution because one of them was a golf fanatic. They've embedded in an inhaler a tiny screen, and when you inhale, if you inhale correctly, the golf ball rolls across the green and goes into the hole. If you don't, it goes around the hole. And so kids, instead of saying, "I don't want to use my inhaler, Mum," play the game until they get the ball into the hole. Therefore, the asthma inhalers are working. NHS reckon this will save them £400 million over the next 10 years. Mm. A fantastic example of a really brilliant little bit of creative design coming together, better outcome, reduced public cost. That's exactly the kind of thing that we should be aiming for more. In terms of the second question, I don't know who wants to deal with that. In a sense, that's
Can
what
I
we've all been...
one for the first? Yeah. I think it's easy to associate it with product or output of things. For me, service innovation in the services that we supply people with would be, that the mechanism for navigating paying your tax online, more simply, the mechanism for subscribing to the Boris bike scheme more easily, the system of navigating. I tried to hire a Boris bike yesterday because my thing had run out. It took 4 credit cards, to get there, and I was 10 minutes late for something. But it's those sorts of things. It's those things that we allow to continue to happen that are incredibly frustrating, which we know the answer to. And a very basic one for me that came up in the Design Effectiveness Awards that the DBA has was the Lambeth Council tax bill. They'd been losing money hand over fist because people weren't paying. And it transpired that people weren't paying because actually most of the bills weren't getting to their destination. because the names of the people on the letters are so long that they outstrip the size of the window. And so stuff just wasn't getting delivered to the right place. So there was a plus side and a bad side. The plus side was a lot more people got their bills on time and actually paid. The downside, of course, was they had to let go the two people who were manning the telephone complaints line because the number of complaints dropped. But it's those sorts of things. I don't think we should put up with that level of service from those organisations that we have to interact with at that level.
And you're quite right. Systems innovation is much richer area than simply good product design.
It took me 45 minutes to find a pregnant woman in a hospital to visit. It shouldn't be possible. It shouldn't take that long.
Okay, can we go on to the second question? And I mean, any member of the panel wants to comment. I mean, perhaps on the second and third point. I mean, one is how do we engage bedroom entrepreneurs more effectively in what's going on, is what I understand you to be saying. And the other is how do we get some simplification and order and coherence in this kind of jumble of activity that's going on out there?
Bedroom entrepreneurs, I think it's a good point. I mean, I said in my talk, I think quite interesting the way that incubator business space can be developed as a centre to bring people out of their bedrooms into a sort of first-stage working environment. There are good examples of how that's been achieved. I mean, Google Campus is a good new example because you can sign up to use Campus for free. You can go, if you've got a laptop, you can go there and work in a free Wi-Fi environment. And when you're there, you know, there'll be talks, there'll be courses, there'll be things going on there as well as other people to work alongside, which will be helpful for you developing your business. Plus then more formal incubator space for the next first step as your business grows and develops. So I think we have to look at how can we use spaces to bring people together like that. Our town centres have got a lot of empty space. It's got a lot of empty office space, a lot of empty retail space. And I think it would be good for local authorities to work with the local enterprise partnerships to think about how could we create a new life for some of this space and create working environments for some of these bedroom entrepreneurs to come together. I had a recent meeting with Barclays Bank in Folkestone and asked them what the biggest trend was for people setting up businesses. And it is exactly these type of bedroom entrepreneurs. It is, you know, younger people, setting up design or digital web-based businesses, running them out of their bedroom. So how can we get those people into an environment which is more likely to help them grow their business?
Anyone else? On this simplification point particularly, we're talking about good design. That's about design.
After you.
Well, I was just going to say I thought the question was twofold. You were talking about the bedroom entrepreneurs, but you were also talking about how do we access creative people to the creative industries more effectively. And, you know, the different routes. We massively recruit people with university degrees, actually. And there was a big session at the BBC the other day where, you know, employers were actually saying, you know, we recruit posh. And that links very much to the work Alan Milburn's been doing around fair access. Mm. If we are going to reach out to the brightest, the best, we have to look at the school curriculum, we have to look at careers advice and guidance, we have to look at ensuring we connect mentors from the industry. We have to look at pre-apprenticeship programs. There's a whole slew of issues. If you read the Creative Industries Council report, and I'm really pleased that actually going back to those bids employers have put in, those really do focus on routes and alternative routes into these industries, because I think everybody recognises at the end of the day it's a massive business case as well as a social and fairness case.
That's right. And just to add as well that I think we are starting to see, I mean, we know this through our work on apprenticeships, and, you know, we started in 2008 having, you know, in-depth conversations with individual businesses, persuading them to try and change their recruitment culture and make, you know, create an apprenticeship place in their business. And, you know, for some of those tiny businesses who were in the middle of a three-year development plan, that is only just coming to fruition now. We are now not having to call businesses individually. They are now starting to call us. Mm. So it is shifting, but it's tiny. And in comparison to other industries, aren't we? We, you know, slide 3,000 apprentices all together, between us. It's a long game.
It falls to me then to take the simplification issue. I get confused. And I'm, you know, I get the time to read all of this stuff. It's acronym heavy. It's very broad. And I think it is a design challenge. I think we need to commission someone to look at the support landscape for the creative industries in the UK, create that map. I think there are probably instances where there are organisations we could get rid of because perhaps their time has come to the end. The mechanisms in which we pay for the support of services into the sector could change. I think there are a lot more innovative ways in which we could be doing that better. But I think you're right. It's, I was sitting listening to everything you were saying, thinking, oh, God, I've got to go and read another document and get my and try and recall what the acronyms are. You know, and I've just thrown another set of stuff at you.
Yes.
I deliberately didn't try and explain where in the European Commission we've been working. But actually, you know, that infrastructure, I think, is important. Mm. And only then, I think, do we identify where the gaps are.
Go on, Kathleen.
I'd just like to make an extra point in relation to that, in that I don't think that the, I mean, in our experience, creative industries aren't tidy and they don't like being put into little boxes. So I completely take the point and agree with Deborah that simplification from the kind of support side is vital. It's almost impossible, though, to tidy anything up. And I think it has been the civil servant's instinct to do that, but actually we need to think carefully about what the creative industries
sort of need. We're not talking about merger. So they're very disparate groups. The one size fits all doesn't work, and they need to be managed in the way in which they group themselves, actually.
But I think, I was going to say is that I think you make a very good point about design. I mean, going back to that, the sort of online tool I was talking about, I think it's really important, particularly in the skills and education landscape, to try and make things simpler for people, because actually, at the end of the day, it's one thing about, you know, how we all work together. The critical thing is how do we effectively collaborate such that the employers and individuals know where to access and can be easily led to the right areas of support. So I think we've still got a lot of work to do on that.
I think this increasingly will be an area where local government will lead in terms of local delivery and is the funnel for taking its own view on what's best in its own area. Because of the changes to the way business rates are going to be collected and distributed, local authorities have suddenly got sort of skin in the game of the local economy in a way they haven't had before. They get more money if there's more growth in their area. And therefore, I think local authorities are in a good position to take a strategic approach, you know, and it doesn't have to be just at the local enterprise partnership level, which is sort of sub-regional, could be smaller than that. I think it's easier if you're a big city region where, you know, it's quite clear sort of where you are. But I think larger local authorities can say, what can we do to stimulate growth, say, in the creative sector in our part of the country? I look at Kent in my area to say, well, there are pockets there where we can see, you know, we can see business activity, we can see some courses and training. What needs to be done to add to that, and what support is out there that we can go and access and bring in? Mm. And the delivery may be different in different parts of the country because the skill base and also the business footprint will be different in different parts of the country. But I think that I think that local leadership can probably provide that simplicity, but drawing on a great breadth of different types of products and services that are available.
Okay, thank you all. Listen, I'm sorry, we have an elegantly designed day, and the elegance of the design is being destroyed by the bad timekeeping of the chairman. So I'm going to say we are now going to have a short coffee break, and will you all please thank the panel for their very, very interesting contributions.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.